in a week. 6 feet tall when he'd come to Gomez, he had grown another 3 inches since then, and muscled like an ox. It had been January's job to hold the patients down while his teacher dug lead out of their chests or thighs or abdomens. He knew the frantic strength of their struggles. Even muffled by leather-wrapped gags, their screaming bled into his dreams. When they died under his grip, the dreams were worse. All this had flooded back into his mind, waiting in the dark atop that 10-foot redoubt, waiting for the fighting to begin. Somewhere behind him, he was aware of blurry pinpricks of yellow light, the windows of the DeMcCarty plantation house. Somewhere to his right, barely visible lanterns on the sloop Louisiana, lying still on the river, pirate guns trained on the field that the redcoats would have to cross. The faces of the duelists he'd helped operate on returned to him. Young men, as he was young. Men with mothers and sisters like his own, who loved them. In many cases, who depended on them for the whole of their livelihood. Mothers, sisters, wives who would lose with their sons or brothers or husbands all their means of support. Men who had looked forward to years ahead, to sweethearts, wives, children. To evenings spent with friends, laughter, music, talk, the joy of knowing you weren't alone. All those small, exquisite islands of peace gone, never to return, in one crimson splash of agony. In the darkness, a man would cough, or he'd hear the crunch of boots on wet gravel and shell. The ghostly shape of General Jackson on his white horse passed behind them along the line, a soft creak of saddle leather and the grind of hooves. Will I survive this day? Then far off in the silence, the beating of the British drums. 1841. Not quite a month after the 26th anniversary of that clammy dawn, on the 5th of February, 1841, Benjamin January played at a public ball in the Orléans Ballroom on Rue Orléans, where he had played every carnival season since his return from Paris 8 years before. During carnival, every ball was a masked ball. Even before his departure for Paris, even before he'd turned 18, January had presided over the ballroom's green and gold 6-octave Broadwood, leading the other musicians in the complexities of waltzes and quadrilles, olivettes and passepieds, while the white folks danced. Planters who owned mills of sugar and cotton, along the river or on any bayou big enough to carry freight. Wealthy townsmen who owned the cotton presses, the brickyards, the sugar mills and steamboats that made New Orleans the economic heart of the Mississippi Valley. French and Spanish, and the Americans who'd come flooding into the city in the years after that battle. Merchants and slave owners. Some nights, their mothers, daughters, sisters, and wives. But this wasn't one of those nights. The mothers, daughters, sisters, and wives were in attendance tonight at a subscription dance in the Théâtre d'Orléans, a venue owned by the same man, Pierre Davis, and in the same complex of buildings on Rue d'Orléans. And indeed, these ladies had been squired to that event by their husbands, uncles, brothers, sweethearts, whose mistresses, free women of color after the Caribbean custom, were in the Orléans ballroom less than 100 feet away. During his years in Paris, January's friends had all shaken their heads over the custom of the country, just as if most wealthy Frenchmen didn't have mistresses, though not, to be sure, simply at the end of a discreet passageway from one ballroom to the other, which not a white woman in New Orleans would admit existed. The old Orléans ballroom had burned down in the years that January had spent in France, but upon his return, and for the 8 years thereafter, he had played, turn and turn about, for the so-called quadroon balls, or blue ribbon balls, or for the respectable subscription dances held in the théâtre, or in the new ballroom above the gambling rooms. The custom remained the same after 26 years, but he could see the changes that time had wrought. The whole world had changed since 1814. The town in which he'd grown to manhood, the town for which he'd fought against an invading army, was no longer what it had been. It was odd to miss a place when standing in it. Beside the piano, Hannibal Sefton, the only white man on the musician's dais, like a dilapidated elf in a coat that had probably seen the inauguration of Thomas Jefferson, caught the melody of the piano's bright Schubert galopade, and with his violin, embroidered a galaxy of golden lace around it. On the other side, the alto voice of Cochon Gardinier's viol and the sweetness of Jacques Bichet's flute touched each note of piano and violin with a counterpoint, like shadow and roses. Not the men January had played